Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I was going to say today, I want to start off with something that was on the news today. And it's becoming a daily thing with everybody. We hear of mass shootings. We hear of stabbings. We hear of so many things going on in the communities and also in the prison. Today, there was news on the news about Sousa Baranowski Correctional Center. This is a maximum secure prison in Massachusetts, which I want to add is most people say that it carries hardcore criminals. But I want to talk a little bit about Sousa Baranowski Correctional Center, as well as others around the country. This is a prison where prisoners have had so many problems with them. And they reached out. They reached out for help from various lawyers, from various organizations, groups, and so on. And unfortunately, most of them don't get the help that they're crying out for. So what happens eventually, as we hear about all over the country at times when they have these food strikes, prisoners go on strike, trying to get the attention of the media, trying to get the attention of people in the communities. And when that doesn't happen, they hold all of this internally until everything explodes. A lot of these people in prison are suffering at the hands of corrupt correctional officers and officials. And as I say all the time, there's a lot of good correctional officers and there's a lot of good officials. But then there's the corrupt ones that will do anything in their power to make people miserable, that will lie to senators and legislative members such as the Congress people. And it's gotten to the point where even advocates a lot of times are very frustrated with the results. I was speaking recently with a legislative member, one of the aides, and they were saying how they reached out to Sousa Baranowski Correctional Office official on many occasions, and they didn't get responses back. Now, I want to say something. When people reach out for help, prisoners reach out for help, they don't get it. When advocates reach out for help, they don't get it. So what they do, they try to climb the ladder. They try to go to somebody at a higher level. And when you go to somebody at the most highest level, or pretty much highest, in Congress, and they don't get a response, this is sad, because this goes to show you exactly what the prisons are about. If these prison officials can't respond to a congressman or a congresswoman, or even a senator, that's showing a lot of nerve. That's showing that they think they can be above the law. They can do anything they want. When it gets to that point, so if prisoners can't get the help when they reach out, and advocates can't get the help when they reach out, and legislative members in the House can't get the responses, and the senators can't get the responses, and the congresspeople, congressmen and women can't get what happens in a case like that? I'll tell you. The Department of Corrections around the country, at that point in time, the commissioners, the officials, the COs, they feel that they are above the law. They feel that they can do anything they want. And no one's challenging them. We talk about this event that's coming up next month, not even next month, in a couple of weeks. A national event where everybody will be calling in, writing letters, emailing, not only to ACLU, not only to the legislative members, but to the media, and even going so far as to email, write, and call the United Nations, because right now the United States is in violation of some of their policies, their restrictions, and the United States is part of the United Nations. Then we have advocates, unfortunately, who are like children at times. They have their quarrels with one another. They have their disputes. They have their conflict. And all of a sudden, they're pouting like little kids and going off in different directions, and some with their cliques. I'm the type of person, my focus is on helping the incarcerated individuals. If I have an argument with you today, I'm going to be talking to you or ready to talk to you within a couple of hours. You might hold it in for years or months or days or weeks. I don't care. But what I'm saying is right now, we're supposed to be fighting for the incarcerated individuals men, women, and youth who are being sentenced to life and life without parole, who are being sentenced to the death penalty, who are receiving unnecessary, harsh treatment, and prison conditions are inhumane. I don't want to hear anybody talking about they're an advocate, they're a strong advocate, when they can go so far as to all of a sudden drift away. There was an advocate, and there is an advocate here in Massachusetts. I sent her a letter on email one time to come on the show, knowing she wouldn't. But because prisoners are asking that I contact some of these advocates in Massachusetts, and I'm sure you're going to hear the same thing in your state. This particular advocate isn't a clique. And she was perturbed when I sent her that email, because I sent an email to another advocate letting the other advocate know this woman would not respond. I know, because I've sent emails to her in the past and she didn't respond. And that email I sent to the advocate also went to her. And her response, instead of talking it out, she sends me an email and saying this is the answer. She said F you, but it wasn't the F you. It was the whole entire word written out. And I'll tell you, I was brought up in a different way. I don't know how she was raised, but I was raised not to use the word. And I did use it one time after that. And this is the way our children in the communities are going to be when they hear that kind of language coming out. These kids are going to be out there using the same language. And everybody's going to be calling them thugs and punks and everything else as they get older. The reason I'm saying this is I want everybody to know the way you talk to one another, the way you talk to your own, the way you talk with anybody is going to affect those that are listening in, whether they be children, whether they be adolescents, whether they be young men and women. But some people don't care. As long as they're feeling like they're cool, they're in the clique, they can do what they want. They can say what they want. They're not about advocating, truly being advocates for the incarcerated, nor are they about respecting their fellow advocates or the children and adolescents that may be around listening. I remember when I was in Ghana, West Africa, and I was there for a couple of years, and I saw some young men in their teens walking down the road, and they're effing this and effing that. And I'm saying to them, what are you doing? What are you saying? Because people over in Africa, I'll tell you, they're being polluted probably by people going over there from this country. But people over in Africa are very respectful, very hospitable. But these two young men, when I asked them what they were doing, they said, that's the way they talk in the United States. That's the way they talk in America. I said, yeah, the young men and women may be talking like that in this country, but they're not being respected. It's a shame when other countries look at this country and all the pollution and the polluted mouths and the polluted actions that go on in this country. And these young people are picking it up because they're listening. They're listening. And if they can be listening and doing that all the way over across the other thousands of miles away, what is it going to be like the ones that are right here in their own country? Your children's friends, the kids in the community, the adolescents, the teenagers. What is it doing to them? And I'm going to tell you, when somebody raises their kids with ignorance like that, it affects other people's children. There were people in prison that don't even belong in prison, but they were stumbled by ignorance in the communities, by people who think it's cool to use that kind of language, by people who think it's cool to be in with your peers, to be in your cliques, claiming to be helping the incarcerated, when all that's happening is emails going back and forth between all of the cliques. I gave a group in this state an opportunity to join forces with us in making these calls because some of the incarcerated individuals asked me to. These people want us all to come together. These people behind the bars want us to work together in unity so that there is hope for them. And yet we have people like that that would prefer to keep the conflict going rather than to get over it like grown-ups and move on to the cause and the event that we're talking about coming up. There was an incident today at Susa Baranowski, and people will be talking about that here, I'm sure. That will be in their emails going back and forth, because it's easier to send emails back and forth to your peers, your cliques, than it is to do actual work, to stay focused, to work in unity. I joined a coalition in the beginning that the Sentencing Project wanted to get started in Massachusetts, and it was to eliminate or work on a committee to try to get rid of this life without parole. Unfortunately, the monies that were contributed, they were used, requested, for the coalition to work on this project. A lot of it was used to hire somebody to do something. A lot of paperwork and flyers, paperwork, things that people would volunteer to do. There are students in universities going to school for law, going to school for paralegal, going to school for psychology and social work, going to school for criminal justice. They would gladly volunteer with any organization, because I have volunteers that volunteer with me from universities across the country. They would give anything to do it, to earn their internships. It wouldn't cost anything because they were volunteers, and they are volunteers. But yet we have a coalition all of a sudden with $25,000, and it's going to be used for paperwork. It's going to be used for flyers. It's going to be used for talking, hiring somebody to do it, when in fact they can actually have volunteers do it. So I want a lot of you to know that not everybody that claims to be an advocate is truly advocating for prisoners. Some prisoners may think so because they're getting their names out there. They're being seen in public. But they're not doing what they need to do, and that is working in unity. But going back to when I first started the coalition and I was talking about uniting with other states, and I was told that every state is different, that the focus had to be on Massachusetts. But I'm the type of person, I've been networking with advocates around the country since 2004, when I first started my organization. And I continue to monitor, and I continue to work with them, and I continue to network with them. And those are the ones that have been working with us on this project coming up in a couple of weeks, trying to get all of you to join forces, because in numbers is success. Not flyers, not emails, not talking, not liking on Facebook, but actually getting involved. Many of you who have loved ones inside, and many of you who are advocating for loved ones and friends inside, this is how it's going to be successful, to bombard the media, because the media only reports the one-sided stories. And it only takes a five-year-old to know that if everybody joins forces for the month of June, in making phone calls and writing letters and emails to the media, CNN News, MSNBC, Fox 25, Channel 7 News, WBZ, NPR, PBS. Hit the media first. Get them involved, because the media is always reporting one-sided stories, hence mass incarceration, because the other voices are not being heard. Then we have to look at the outrageous sentencing. I want to let all of you know, tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, I will be interviewing Frans Dahl from Amsterdam, a former 27-year veteran warden who has been in the U.S. prison. He's going to be coming on to talk about the U.S. prison. A 27-year warden. I've had prisoners on this show and ex-offenders on this show talking about the prisons. A lot of these people do not even know one another, but they know what they have witnessed and what they have experienced in the penal system in the United States prisons. You have heard it. It's sick. Human rights violation. Inhumane conditions. Abuses. Violations. Torment and tortures and deprivations. For depriving prisoners of participating in educational courses. Paying them less than a dollar a day to work for these big corporations that are making billions of dollars off of their work. And a lot of these prisoners are losing their belongings because the COs and the prison officials managed somehow to get them. Somebody told me today. She called me to tell me about her grandson who is in prison. She called me to tell me what he's going through. And I told her I don't want to hear it. Because I have everybody calling me to tell me about what their loved ones are going through in the penal system. I know. I know because I've experienced it. I know because I've been doing this for years. And I've been hearing it from people all over the country, not just in one state, not just in a couple of prisons. Your situation may seem isolated to you. It may seem like you're the only, your son or daughter or your grandson or whomever is the only one going through it. But we have 2.3 million people incarcerated in this country, the most ever in any country. And these people incarcerated are crying out for help. They're crying out for help. They're crying out for you to listen. They want to have a voice. They want to let you know what they're going through inside. You've heard it from prisoners. You've heard it from former prisoners. You've heard it from others that have talked about what they're going through. If you are sincerely a advocate, as many of you claim to be, if you really are an advocate and not just in a clip and enjoying it because you're able to talk a lot and not do anything, if you're sincerely interested in helping these incarcerated individuals, I'm asking you to join forces with us starting in 2 weeks, actually less than 2 weeks. Today's the 23rd. Starting the 1st of June, there's only 30 days. In June, starting June 1st to June 30th, to make phone calls, to write letters, to email. When you do this, you can do it with anybody you want. You can talk about any of the injustices you want. You can talk about the sentencing guidelines. You can talk about the outrageous life sentences, the death row. And I tell everybody all the time, what's the purpose of the death row? We have a government that's ready to kill someone that has murdered someone, a government that's doing the exact same thing that they are executing the offenders for. The only difference is they have power because they have a title. But you don't kill somebody for killing somebody and think that's punishment. That's doing the exact same thing. You're a criminal too if you can do that. If you're in government and you can kill another person for killing because this is your way of punishing somebody, how do you know the person you're executing didn't kill somebody because they're punishing somebody for killing somebody that was related to them or someone they loved? What gives people the right to take a life just because somebody else has done taking a life? That is not punishment. That is doing the exact same thing with the idea that you can get away with it. We need to look at what's going on in this country, not just in Massachusetts, not just in California, not just in Florida, not just in Ohio, not just in New York, Iowa, Idaho, not just in Alabama, Mississippi, not just in Texas, Oklahoma. We have to look at every single state in this United States, and we have to look at every single prisoner behind those prison walls, especially the ones that are crying out. And I want to say something else. I don't know if any of you know this, but there are prisoners behind those prison walls that have no family. They have no one. They're hidden away. And nobody knows what's being done to them. Nobody knows. And that's why there's so many suicides. That's why so many people have committed suicide in prison. And look at those who are alleged to have committed suicide when they were crying out for help because they were being abused and violated and no one would listen to them. Was it abuse? Was it suicide or was it homicide? And as I said before, I went to Pennsylvania on two occasions, back in 2007 and 2008. Three prisoners crying out for help. They were being kept in the hole, crying out for help. And somehow it got out because another prisoner got the message out that these prisoners were being abused. One of them was due to be released 5 months. They said that prisoner was taken from SCI Smithville, was taken to Frackville, SCI Frackville, kept there for a couple of days and then brought back. And it was supposed to have been that night that he alleged to have committed suicide. That was Joe Holquin. Another one was Joe Kappa. Another one was Clifford Finney. And as I said before, before any of them died, I contacted Senator Leanna Washington. I contacted American Civil Liberties Union. I reached out to the news, Channel 6 News in Pennsylvania. They actually asked me to get the information to them. Not being from Pennsylvania, I asked a couple of other advocates. Donna Fender, Fight for Lifers. Donna Fender said Brett Grody, who is now a lawyer, at the time was an advocate, didn't want the media involved. I contacted David Baska, federal attorney, not only from Washington, but from Florida. David Baska took a flight out, was supposed to, and he spoke with Brett Grody before going to Pennsylvania. They were supposed to meet. And David, God rest his soul, he passed away from a heart attack, but told me he never got greeted or even had a chance to talk to Brett because Brett never met with him. I contacted Jerry Spence. Jerry Spence is a well-known lawyer, anti-government, who has never lost a case out in Colorado. Someone told me about Jerry Spence. I contacted him, and Jerry Spence told me he's no longer a lawyer because he's now a professor. Now, this was 20-something years ago, or close to 20 years ago. He's now a professor, but what he did, he emailed his friend. He emailed his friend who was a lawyer, and he told his friend what was going on in Pennsylvania, and he copied me to it, and he told his friend if there's any way to help. And his friend said, yes, he would help any if they could get one lawyer in Pennsylvania to start some kind of civil suit, that he would work with them. He would do the best he could. And his own daughter, Sherry Trine, she had just gotten her license to practice. Sherry wanted to go to Pennsylvania, but she hadn't been practicing long enough to be able to do any representation in Pennsylvania. I'm sure she is now. She's probably able to travel anywhere she wants. But her father, Bill Trine, and Sherry Trine, they were willing to help. But for some reason, no lawyer in Pennsylvania was willing to start, to get started. And the advocates, for some reason, didn't want outside attention. What's it all about? Somebody's trying to get somewhere, make something of themselves. And because they were trying to make something of themselves, they didn't want the media to come in. They didn't fight to get a lawyer involved where these other lawyers, more professional, from Colorado or from Florida at the time, could come in. You get tired and you get frustrated and you get really angry when you're trying so hard to bring help to the incarcerated individuals, especially those who are suffering. And you run up against all kinds of people who claim to be advocates, but yet you get in a little conflict with them or disagree with them on something, and all of a sudden they want nothing to do with you or anything that you're doing. That's the difference between real advocates and advocates that are looking out for themselves. 617, state your name, please. Okay, somebody's listening, I guess. Oh, I'm sorry, I got them on. I'm sorry, I have you on mute. Let me take you off mute. Okay, 617. Okay, they're listening. But this is what I'm saying. We have an opportunity because there's going to be a lot more going on in June than what we're proposing to do. Because June, as you've heard, Juneteenth, is when all these young black men have been killed, George Floyd and so many others, that Juneteenth is where they will be doing their own thing in memory of these young men who died needlessly, unnecessarily, barbarically, inhumanely. We hear a lot of people talking about race. A lot of people who are sick of hearing about race are sick of hearing about the blacks talking about all this racism and all this. But let me tell you something. It's real. It is real. And you may say, well, I'm not a racist. We're going to find out in June. Because I always say, even with President Obama, he couldn't have got in without the help of the whites as well. But we want to find out. We want to find out just how many of you that do say you're not racist are going to be there for the entire month of June. And we will know because we will hear from the media themselves. When they get so bombarded, it will be on the news. Even if you leave messages on the answer machines, the voicemail, blow it up. ACLU. I've been sending all this contact information throughout Facebook, social media, wherever you see addresses of anything, media, wherever you see addresses of governors, wherever you see addresses of the United Nations, wherever you see it, click on it, open it up. It'll give you the telephone numbers, the emails. It'll give you all the information you need. And even if you only make a couple of calls a week, think, your couple of calls a week and all the others throughout the country making the same thing, we're going to see how many of your family members of the 2.3 million people incarcerated, we're going to see how many of you really, really are there for your loved one. Because if this is successful in numbers, it's going to be all over the news. It's going to be all over the news about all these calls coming in, about all these letters, about all these emails coming to their station or their office. People of color, yes, have suffered. And, you know, they were talking about, in this coalition today, they sent something around. They were talking about the number of people in solitary and on restrictive housing blocks and all this. They get their information, believe it or not, they get their information from the Department of Corrections. So, you know, they're not going to get accurate. But they might think they're getting accurate information because they're the know-it-alls. But they're not getting accurate information. And I want to ask a lot of you, when you look up your loved one or you look up somebody on the inmate locator, look them up. There was a time years and years ago when they used to put down the races, the nationalities of the incarcerated. If you go on there now, you're going to see race unknown. Now, how can you say race unknown when you got a black inmate or a Hispanic inmate? Race unknown. White, Caucasian. The reason being is that when the census is taken, if they don't see the race or the nationality, they're probably automatically just going to put down another white inmate, which is going to keep the statistics down on the number of people of color that are incarcerated in the United States prisons. And I'm sure many of you have heard me when I've been interviewing people from abroad, people from across the pond. Amsterdam, Germany, the Netherlands itself. People coming on talking about the comparison between their countries and the inhumane conditions and mass incarceration in the United States of America. Other countries. There are people in other countries that are actually advocating for prisoners in this country when many of you are not even trying to advocate, not all of you, because there's a lot of you that are trying, that are doing a good job. But there's a lot of you that are just listening and doing nothing. Well, people, even from other countries, are seeing the injustices here. Jan Banning was on the show last week talking about Christina Boyle, wrongfully convicted that he's been advocating for years in Georgia. Franz Kurz, advocating for two wrongfully convicted prisoners in Ohio prisons. Shane Crum, Donald Glenn. Madeline Colburn, working with Bertha Owens, a wrongfully convicted. And also Reginald Clemens, also wrongfully convicted. Beth Michael from the Christian Pen Pal Connection, working with Christopher Dunn, also wrongfully convicted. And if you look up Christopher Dunn on the internet, you will see that Christopher Dunn was, his case was dismissed years ago when he was in his late teens, early 20s, and he's in his late 40s now, still in prison, even after a judge dismissed the case. Person of color. Reginald Clemens has been in all these years, and all of a sudden, they said the years he's already served, all those years don't count anymore. Many of you have talked about the situations in your family, in your state, with what's going on in your state, in your situation. And as I tell you all the time, I tell all of you, when you talk about the injustice being done with your family, it is not an isolated incident. I've got somebody on mute because there's some noise in the background. I don't know if it's your television or what. I'm going to mute you. I guess people don't realize when they come on the show, if they have their TV in the background, they're on mute. So if there's anything you have to say, I won't be able to hear you because you're on mute unless you want to turn the TV or radio off. But this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. Your situation's not an isolated one. We're all on this boat together, no matter what the situation, no matter what the sentence, no matter what the crime. If you have a loved one behind those prison walls, then you're in the same family. Because many families don't get involved, which is unfortunate. And a lot of times it takes other family members of other incarcerated individuals who are involved to be a part of your family. So we make up a whole new family when we have a loved one that stumbles. And again, I'm going back to the media because the media is one of the biggest problems in this country. If you think about it, the media, these large corporations. You know, when I think about the Nikes that are made, these sneakers that are sold for over $100 and something, sometimes $300 for one pair of sneakers. When you think of the prisoners getting paid less than $1 a day. And I know a lot of you on social media, I have seen it over and over again, where you're talking about your loved ones working for nothing. Modern day slavery, they call it. Whether you're white, black, green, red, purple, beige, black, it's all the same. Modern day slavery in the prisons, working for nothing. While these big corporations are making all this money, and the Department of Corrections around the country are making money too. I'm sure they're not doing this for nothing with these large corporations. They're filling their pockets too. And that's why I say it's very important because the money that they're pocketing is not only coming off the forced labor of your loved ones, but it's also coming out of your taxpayers' dollars. And if it's coming out of your taxpayer dollars, then you're going to find, because right now with the Republican and Democrats, with the upcoming debt ceiling that's really out of control, there's not going to be an agreement by the 1st of June. And finances are going to be tighter than ever before. So all I can say is if you don't mind spending money you don't have because you don't want to do anything about it, then that's your prerogative. But you can't say you didn't know because you're hearing it now and you've been hearing it over and over and over and over again. Your taxpayer dollars, people working for pennies, the debt ceiling as of June 1st is going to put a lot of people in a bad, bad situation. So you think about that. Now, I'm going to, once again, wait a minute, we have another caller. 617, would you like to state your name, please?
Lola.
Okay, and Lola is one who recently had a loved one also sent to prison and unfortunately has become another statistic of the United States penal system with their overly and harshly sentencing. So, Lola, can you tell us how long did your son get sentenced
three,
to?
3 to 7 years.
Okay, now, as we all know, 3 to 7 might seem like a lot to a family member who has recently lost a child to incarceration. But for many of you that have loved ones inside serving life sentences and even life plus 20 years, which is another inhumane and unrealistic thing. We have a government that is handing out sentences that are beyond realistic measures. We've had people on the show talking about having their loved ones sentenced to 130 years. One couple came on one time and said they were, the loved one was sentenced to 1,800 years in prison. Do we have a government or what? I don't think so. But we have children running the government. We have children running the government because anybody in their right mind that can give anyone a sentence of even over 100 years is not realistic at all. They're ignorant of the fact that very few people live to be 80 or 90 or 100. And I want to say something else. In our penal system, there are people who are in wheelchairs. There are people who have dementia and Alzheimer's. There are people who are terminally ill. They cannot take care of themselves, and yet we have a government that continues to keep them behind those prison walls, even though these people cannot take care of themselves, never mind harm anyone else. But they're a commodity. They are a commodity in these prisons, so that these people are making money on them. These big corporations, such as Starbucks, such as Walmart, such as McDonald's, Victoria's Secret, even some of the airlines, Wendy's. We have people in this country that are making money off of people, off of human beings. And one of the things that I've heard over and over again from people I have interviewed from other countries is that the United States is a country full of vengeance and greed and retaliation, power, corruption. These are people from other countries saying it, but I'm sure you've heard your own people in this country saying it because it's true. It is so true. So what we're looking at for the month of June, when we make these calls, write these letters, send these emails, is to defund the Department of Corrections around the country, to defund the Department of Corrections around the country until we see some transparency in the interaction between prisoners and these correctional officers and prison officials. Brian Winters from Vermont was once a politician. He's no longer a politician, but he started an American Union, and I'm hoping that all of you will look it up, an American Union, Brian Winters. And Brian Winters is not about either party, but he is about supporting whatever party is for the cause at the time. And he is against mass incarceration, and that's one of his causes. And I would advise everyone to contact Brian Winters, an American Union. You'll find him on the internet. Contact him. And I will say another thing, speaking about Vermont. Vermont and Maine are two of three states in the United States of America that have never, never, never taken away the rights of prisoners to vote. U.S. citizens have not had their rights to vote taken from them in Vermont and Maine, because they have done nothing to harm their country. Yet, every state other than those two and one other state, I believe it's D.C. or Washington or whatever. They've all taken their rights, the prisoners' rights to vote, away from them. For what? Now, the Capitol was stormed January 6th. People died as a result. People committed suicide following. And yet, these people not only will continue to have their rights to vote, but they've been promised that if Donald Trump gets in, he will be pardoning all of them. Does that make sense that U.S. citizens behind those prison walls have had their rights taken from them because they're in for wrongful convictions or they're first-time offenders or they're victims who turned offenders? Does it make sense that none of them can vote for the party that they want to vote for, the one that makes the most sense? No. So that's another thing we're going to be bombarding the media with, and the governors and the legislative members, to restore the rights of prisoners to vote. Donna Wynette is the founder of Families, Friends, and Individuals for the Mentally Ill. Donna and her committee and committees she's working with are adamantly trying to get the Department of Mental Health involved in the prison. The Department of Mental Health should be in the prisons because we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. The contracted providers they have in the penal system, mainly WellPath in 36 states, has caused permanent damage to so many prisoners. I was talking to a prisoner yesterday who was telling me that even he had his knee messed up from one of the doctors with WellPath. It was not Adriana Carrillo. She's a surgeon that has permanently damaged many prisoners, and there's many lawsuits filed against her. But this was another doctor, and unfortunately, I can't remember his name. But we need to do away with the contracted medical providers in these prisons, and as Donna Wynette has been trying to do, get the Department of Mental Health involved in the penal system. These people, the Department of Mental Health, is supposed to be helping the mentally ill, not the Department of Corrections, and many call it the Department of Corruptions. We need to support Donna's group. Get involved. And any students out there that are going to school for mental health issues or mental health degrees, connect with Families, Friends, and Individuals for the Mentally Ill. Contact Donna Wynette. You'll find her on the internet. You'll find her on Facebook. Volunteer to do something. Because there's a lot of people that are mentally ill that aren't even behind those prison walls. But they're behind those guns that are going off, mass incarceration, that we're hearing about now on a daily basis. Stabbings right here in Massachusetts recently in a shooting. It wasn't mass, but we're hearing about mass incarceration in a lot of these states every single day, mainly in Texas, where Texas has a governor, Governor Abbott, who can't execute enough, fast enough. This is a man in a wheelchair whom I believe executes because he can't walk. A lot of these people in prison are physically healthy, but unfortunately psychologically ill and spiritually ill. Then you have these overseers, these governors, for their own reasons, because of their own reasons, whether it be envy, whether it be because they're psychologically ill themselves or medically ill, they're out there not only executing, but throwing lives away forever in their hearts, in their minds. They forget, though, we believe in a higher power. We believe in the highest power. All of these sentences that have been handed down to people are going to be a permanent sentence for them because there is a higher power, the God that we know, the Most High. There's going to be a day when they will have to go before him. They might not believe it because a lot of people say it's never going to happen. It hasn't happened all these years. Why would it happen now? It will happen because if you go in the book of the Bible, Second Peter chapter 3, it will talk about it. People were laughing when Noah was building an ark when there was no rain. They were laughing at him when he was trying to warn them. And it happened. It happened, and they tried to get into that ark as quick as they could, but they couldn't. By then, the doors were locked. So we have a government that's ruling, that's overseeing, that's doing the work of the devil in the sentencing, in the treatment, in the conditions of the prisons, who don't think that they will ever have to be held accountable. But I have news for them. I have news for them. They will be held accountable. And it's not going to be long, because we're looking at a system of things right now where we have global warming, the earth at its hottest peak, and this is why we're hearing about all these earthquakes and tornadoes. That's why we're seeing all these sinkholes. The earth is coming apart. Little by little, the earth is coming apart now, and it's all because of the global warming. And people are still sending those ships and missiles up to the moon and Mars, which, by the way, they are now claiming they believe there's life on Mars. So I'm sure there's going to be more missiles going up. And then we have the nuclear weapons. We have a president that's going over to all these countries when here in the United States of America, everything has fallen apart. Everything. And unfortunately, McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, said it himself. He wished that the president came back to his own country sooner. We have a lot of things that we need to work on in this country. But right now, I'm not concerned about everything that's going on in this country on the outside. I'm concerned with what's going on behind those prison walls, with your loved ones, with our loved ones, with everybody's loved ones, especially those, the meek and the weak, as they say, the lambs amongst the wolves, because there are a lot of them in the prisons. But you only hear about the real bad ones. You only hear about the most outrageous, the most violent, because you're hearing the media side. Legislative members and the media have to go inside and actually talk with these prisoners so that they will know prisoners should not be stereotyped. Every situation is different. Many of these people need psychological help. They should be in long-term residential treatment facilities, long-term residential mental health treatment facilities, and long-term residential substance abuse facilities. And a lot of people say, well, what about these people that are really, really violent? Serial killers. You know, in other countries, as they say, they don't have life and life without parole unless it's extreme, unless it's serial killers, mass incarceration, and terrorists. When we talk about long-term residential treatment facility in the United States, I'm not talking about 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. They can keep them in for 10 years if they're getting the right treatment. Those incarcerated individuals are not going to care if they come out right away because they are going to be getting help that they so desperately need. Mail in the prisons. A lot of these prisoners are not getting their mail. I know myself. I've ordered over 29 books, magazines, for a prisoner who never received any of them. I have the confirmation in the email. There are people who don't get their mail. A lot of people sporadically get their mail. And another thing is, and this was an incarcerated individual that was on the show with us yesterday, mentioned this too. He said, and he may not have mentioned it on the studio, but he may have mentioned it after, but I know he did mention it. And he said, the mail, the U.S. Postal Service, it's the United States of America Postal Service. I remember calling them one time, and they said, unfortunately, once the mail gets to the prison, it's out of their hands. And it shouldn't be. As this incarcerated individual, formerly incarcerated individual, was telling me, it should not be out of their hands when it gets to the prison. Because behind that wall, on the other side of that door, is still a facility that's in the United States of America. So the United States Postal Service should be going inside to monitor when people say they didn't get their mail. The United States Postal Service does not just involve going as far as the prison walls and then leaving it there. And this is why so much mail is not getting to the incarcerated individuals. People who have filed civil suits against the department. There are legal documents that have been destroyed, misplaced, or lost, or delayed. This is an issue that really needs to be addressed, because prisoners have the right to get their mail. But this United States government has put everything in the hands of the corrupt Department of Corrections commissioners around the country. Not to say all of them are corrupt, because I don't know about the commissioners or wardens in every state, but I do know about the problems in every state, and they're all similar. When someone says their loved one went to prison for drugs or alcohol, know that your loved one is not the only one. Out of 2.3 million, I'm sure there's thousands of your sons or daughters behind those prison walls for the same reason. When someone goes to prison for sexual assault, know it's not an isolated situation, because there's thousands in there. Unfortunately, in cases like the former Governor Baker, his son on that airplane where they had to land the plane, well, somehow that disappeared once it came in the media once or twice. All of a sudden, you didn't hear anything more about it. And now, just a few days ago, getting caught swerving all over the main roads in the cities of Boston, drunk, you don't hear any more about it. But you hear about a former DA, Rachel Rollins. Rachel Rollins is a woman. I've seen her once. I never met Rachel Rollins personally, but for some reason, I admired her, because she wasn't about throwing people in prison for drugs and alcohol. She was about putting them in treatment programs, facilities where they get the help, which would have made so much sense, because mass incarceration doesn't have to involve people on drugs or alcohol. That can be taken care of in a rehabilitation center, a long-term rehabilitation facility, just as with mental health. But because she was trying to prevent mass incarceration and trying to get help for these people, they recently found out that she had done some, I guess she was supporting a Democratic DA versus a Republican. And I don't know, maybe you're not supposed to take sides when you're in a position that she was in, because she was actually had gotten to work with the president in a different area. Well, the same area, but the United States Attorney General. But anyway, the media got a hold of that news, and all of a sudden the other news about the former governor, all that disappeared. We're being targeted. There are people being targeted in this country, whether they're in politics, in the streets, in the prisons, in the homes, in the communities. They're being targeted if they are of color or otherwise. And we have another prisoner calling in that may want to say a few words. So I am going to ask, hello?
Hello.
Okay, Donnell, would you like to say, we're on the radio now, would you like to say a few words to the audience? We're talking about the upcoming event in June, but we're also talking about some of the things that go on in the prisons that the media never talks about. And so we would like to hear from you about your thoughts on the treatment and sentencing of incarcerated individuals behind the prison walls, mainly where you are and many others are of color. I'd like to have you speak a little bit about some of these things.
Well, I didn't call for that. I thought this was a private number.
This is right now. This is a private number that's on the air.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't call for this.
Okay, so you don't have anything to... Okay, this is why I don't have people calling this number, because I use this number for a lot of things. Not for the radio show, because I'm not using a phone for the radio show, but I have a live audience right now listening to me talking to you on the phone. So what I'd like to let the audience know is when this is an individual who would at some point in time like to be on the show to talk about his situation. But the thing is, I ask people to please go through their loved ones to connect with me, because first, I'm a very busy person. And not only do I get calls all the time from families of loved ones inside, but I also get calls from prisoners themselves, which takes up all my time, and they interrupts the radio show a lot of times too, as many of you have probably witnessed or listened to before. So what I'd like to do is just to let you know, these are the things, this is why when I get these calls, that people don't seem to realize that I have an obligation to expose, to bring awareness to the public, to go national as I am right now. And when the phone rings and people have nothing to say on the radio show, all it's doing is taking away.
I understand that, but my son gave me this number.
So, anyway, I'm sorry, audience. But this is an individual who did want to come on the show, and I asked him to have somebody in the family connect with me, because I can't have people calling all the time out of the clear blue sky to talk about what they want to talk about with their situation. But all in all, I just want to let everyone know that this is what we're going to be doing in June. And again, I'm asking all of you to please join us in making these phone calls, writing these letters, and sending these emails. Again, you can find all the contact information on Facebook, CNN News. If you can't find it, look it up. It's easy enough to find. CNN News contact information, MSNBC contact information, Channel 7 News, Channel 8 News, 25 News, NEC, NESBC, NCB, CBS. Also, again, go on the Internet, type in legislative member contact information. Governors by state, or governors, listing of governors' contact information throughout the state. Prepare for this. Let this be a hysterical thing, and let the media know that they have to be held accountable for all these people that are dying left and right behind those prison walls because they're not going in. Families Against Mandatory Minimums has been trying to get all of us to contact our legislative members and encourage them to go into the prisons to meet with the prisoners at least once or twice a year to hear their stories, to hear what they are trying to say. And some of the politicians in Massachusetts, there have been a few of them that have started going into the prisons, and they've gone in a couple of times a year. We're encouraging more to get involved around the country. So please make calls to your legislative members, especially those who are fighting for criminal justice reform. Because if they're going to be fighting for criminal justice reform, they need to know what the reform is all about. They need to know what areas of reform are needed. And I will say again, defunding the Department of Corrections is a priority right now. Because I think once they are defunded, they're going to work harder to get their funding back. They're going to work harder to try to work with the incarcerated individuals, because incarcerated individuals are not the troublemakers all the time. Yes, there are some very, very violent people in prison, but not 2.3 million. You might get 100,000 or 300,000 out of that 2.3 million. But there was a time when I was trained as mental health management, and I was around a lot of these people that are incarcerated, they claim, that are so violent. And those people were not violent at all. It's like when I traveled those 11 third world countries. I was told before even leaving this country not to travel alone, because all these countries are violent. You know, they're dangerous. They're American. I didn't enter one country where I was not met with hospitality, with respect. So don't always listen to what you hear, because what you're going to hear is what somebody else wants you to hear, because they want to turn you to their side. And unfortunately, even with Russia, I'm sorry, I don't know. I know Russia's done a lot of damage, but I also see and hear that they're getting it back in return. I know that when this first started, before they even started the war, that our president was over there, our president was talking about Russia was going to do this and do that. It kept going on and on and on until finally it did happen. Sometimes you can talk things into happening. But as a result of us getting involved in something that does not involve us, you have all these countries now coming together, taking sides. You have all of this talk about nuclear weapons now, more so than ever before. Because we ended up going to a country and getting involved in their business when we have, our business has not even been addressed yet. Since all this happened, gas has gone up, food has gone up, utilities have gone up. The deficit is not going to be settled by June 1st. The rent's gone up. People are upset. People are frustrated. People are fighting amongst themselves. It's so many things are happening now that never happened before or have not happened for years. And everything's coming down to its boiling point now. So again, I'm going to say we can sit back and we can let this happen, or we can try to do something about it. And when you make these calls, you don't have to call about everything that we've been talking about. You can pick and choose whatever injustice that you're going through, whatever injustice your family members are going through, whatever injustice you don't think is right. What we're going to be looking at is ending the death penalty. There's no need for it. Two wrongs don't make a right. Mixed messages can only cause more harm to people in the long run. Ending life and life without parole. Because we're the only country in the world that has life and life without parole. Again, unless it involves serial killers, mass incarcerations, or terrorism. We're the only country that sentences beyond 25 years. Defunding the Department of Corrections around the country until we see transparency, improvement, and the interaction between the prisoners and the staff, and until we start seeing everybody participating in programs. Mandatory programs is another thing we're going to be talking about. I believe that every person that gets incarcerated should be mandated to take educational programs, whether it's correspondence, whether it's in the prison. Everyone should be mandated to take educational courses, because there's a lot of prisoners who are being denied. And if it's mandatory, then we're going to know that everybody will be able to participate in educational programs. And if they're denied, then we have something to fight with. Replacing the contracted medical providers with independent providers, Department of Mental Health, doctors and nurses from hospitals, Mass General Hospital, Lahey Clinic, Brigham and Women's, whatever hospital, whatever state you're in, try to get them involved. We have a lot of these people sending things around. They're doing these studies on different things. They're doing studies on the bones. They're doing studies on cancer. They're doing studies on diabetes. Let them go into the prisons and ask the prisoners if they want to participate in the study, because a lot of these prisoners are not getting the treatment that they need, the medical treatment that they need, or the psychological treatment. They want to participate in these studies. Many of them have had permanent damages done to their knees, their shoulders, their legs. They've had permanent damage done, and they're looking for someone, some company or some university or some doctors that are doing these studies to see if there's any way to have the damages reversed, restored, replaced. So that's going to be another thing. Getting rid of the contracted providers and putting in providers, independent providers. Another thing is putting these incarcerated individuals in prisons and or blocks of their own peers. Put the elderly with the elderly. Anyone 50 or over, put them with the elderly. Anyone that's a youth, adolescent, that are in prison, put them with the adolescents. Put the gang members with the gang members. Put the middle-aged with the middle-aged. The disabled ones with the disabled. Categorize. What they're doing is they're throwing everybody in prison as though they were cattle. And that's why so many people are being killed. That's why so many people are being suffering so much. Violations. Violated. And put the GLBTs in a safe place. and take the female guards and female prison officials out of the prison system when it involves the males, and put the male with the male and the female with the male female. Now, all of you probably have heard about Lowell Prison in Florida. It's a female prison where all these women were being raped by the staff. And this happened about 5 years ago. No males should be in a female prison. And no females should be in male prison. There was a prisoner who was in Ohio. He won a big lawsuit for the prisoners in Ohio prison one time. So they transferred him to North Carolina. And he was originally from North Carolina anyway. While in prison there, he walked in on a female guard having sex with a male guard. And apparently the female guard and the male guard were both married. He tried to sneak out before they saw him, but they saw him. And from that moment on, they were out to try to kill him. And finally, the feds got involved. He somehow was able to get connected to somebody who ended up getting him transferred out of there into another prison that is federal. There's a prisoner, a former mentally ill prisoner, Daryl Rainey, who I'm sure many of you have heard of. This was several years ago. Who the guards locked, this is a mentally ill black male in Florida. The guards locked him in the shower stall, turned the water up to 180 degrees, and scalded that man to death. Everybody on the block could hear him screaming for his life. And the last I heard, the family still had not gotten an apology from the prison, the DOC. And it was a white man that was trying to bring justice, not the NAACP, not the National Action Network. And Black Lives Matter, I don't think, existed back then. It was a white man that was so concerned that continued to fight to bring justice for that man. These are the things that are going on in the prisons. These are the things that everybody seems to be ignoring. When I put things on Facebook, I get so upset. Because what I want is not only to be liked, but I want it to be shared far and wide throughout the world. Because I want the world to see what this is all about. To see what your own country's citizens are going through by its own government. And unfortunately, by its own peers. For those of you who have not gotten involved, who don't seem to be worried about getting involved. And one of the things I found out, too, a lot of people incarcerated, young people especially, they don't care if they come out or not because they have nothing to come out to. Many of them, their families were not there to support them when they were in the streets, when they were out of their homes. Their families weren't there to support them. Their families haven't been there for them since they've been incarcerated. So they don't care if they ever come out or not, which means they don't care if they get involved with the drugs that are being passed around in the prisons. And we all know where the drugs are coming from, because if you go on the internet and you type in guards being caught smuggling drugs into the prisons, you're going to see where the drugs are coming from. And why are the drugs being smuggled into the prison? So that they can be sold. And who's going to make money off of these sales? Think about it. We're hearing all about the immigrants trying to get over here to start a new life and about them bringing drugs over. This is nothing. Crime is not committed by these immigrants. It's committed by its own citizens of the United States of America. And many of them government, bringing in the drugs, making money, and using immigrants as an excuse because you don't want them here. Just say you don't want them here. But don't use it as an excuse to keep immigrants from coming to these countries. These drugs that are coming in in large, large quantities when they do come in. But again, recently they found out there was some big official that was getting them brought in. He got caught too. So think about it, audience. Don't hate immigrants, because all of you were immigrants at one time, remember? We all came from someplace. That's why it's called the United States of America, because it's residents in this country, representatives of every country in the world. And every country in the world had a right to come over to this country. And I wonder if some of these countries had to pay a lottery. Because when I was traveling, I learned from someone in a couple in Panama, I believe it was, who said they had to pay $100 and something. This was 20-something years ago. They had to pay $100 and something for a lottery that did not even, it didn't even confirm that they would be accepted. So what's happening is these people are being charged all these hundreds of dollars to fill out, to come on a lottery, and if they don't get accepted, they lose that money. Only in America, right? Only in America. So I'm not going to sit here and waste time filling everyone's ears, because I'm sure if you are interested in what was being said and wanted to participate, you would be calling in, and the number is 657-383-1630. Again, 657-383-1630. I am not a racist. I don't hate people in other countries. I just don't think we should be along in any country when we have major problems in our own. I don't hate all prison guards, correctional officers and officials, or police officers, because I have a nephew that's a police officer on the Cape. But I will say there are a lot of corrupt police officers, a lot of corrupt COs, correctional officers, and a lot of corrupt prison officials who are making it so dangerous for the good ones. Because there are so many people in this country right now that hate police officers, correctional officers, and prison officials so bad that many of them are probably out there trying to kill them now. And unfortunately, some of the good ones may be killed because of their corrupt peers. Think about it. Instead of these corrupt peers trying to better themselves to make their own good ones look even better, they continue to do their dirt because they don't care about their peers that are doing good. They don't care if their peers that are doing good get shot down for trying to do the right thing. So I am going to end the show in a few minutes, and I want to thank everybody for listening in. Again, I'm going to remind everyone, in less than 2 weeks, we're going to be starting to make these phone calls. I'm asking everyone to start, first of all, with the major media outlets. Start with CNN News. Start with MSNBC, and your local news. Start with PBS and NPR. And especially, stop writing or calling or emailing the United Nations. This is something that we all need to do, and we have people that are willing to work with us if we do it. So the United Nations has to know about these things that are going on in the prison, especially the abuses, the tortures, the violations, the outrageous sentencing, and the death penalty. We need to do away with that. Mike Farrell, who is the founder or one of the founders of the Death Penalty Focus, they are working on abolishing the death penalty. He said at one time that they were using as an alternative life sentencing. But neither one of them need to be used. Neither one of them are necessary. If other countries don't have it, and their success rate is even much better than ours, they have little to no recidivism rates, and they say that their guards, their correctional officers, talk to the prisoners as a human being. They don't call them by numbers. They call them by name. The programs that they have, everything that they have, they do it on a humane basis. So let's get in contact with the United Nations and report these violations. Let's get involved with the media. Let's get the media, first of all, much involved. And then start going to each governor throughout the country and legislative members that are working on criminal justice reform. Support those who are working towards criminal justice reform. Support them. Because what they're doing is humane, it's respected and admired. And there's one senator who is strongly for prison reform, strictly against life and life without parole. And she was a person who lost her own family member to a murder. And yet she has been forgiving enough to fight for the freedom of these incarcerated individuals. Think about it. So we're going to be closing now. And again, tomorrow at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which will be 8 o'clock over in Amsterdam, we will be interviewing Frans Dow. And also Marion Jacobs will be back on with us. Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands, a psychosocial therapist who has been talking about the prisons in the United States. She's been in the U.S. prisons. She does volunteer work in one of the prisons in the Netherlands. And she's been advocating for incarcerated. Marion Jacobs recently wrote a book. The name of the book, and it's in the libraries now, the name of the book is Suspended Values in Concentration Camp and Prison. And the book is about the concentration camp and compared to the U.S. prisons. It's going to be very interesting. So join us tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time when we interview Frans Dow and Marion Jacobs from across the pond. I thank everyone for listening. And again, tomorrow the number is always the same. To call in to speak with Frans Dow or Marion Jacobs or just to make comments or ask questions, 657-383-1630. I thank you all once again for joining us. And I'm now going to close this episode. Now, Lula, are you still on with us?
Yes.
Is there anything that you'd like to say before we close about anything?
No, I wouldn't like to speak, not right now.
Okay, I want to say one thing about Lula. Lula is a woman that I met quite a while ago. And the reason I've always admired her is because she had a loved one inside, but it wasn't her own. And she advocated for that person for years. That person's mother had passed away, and she's always been there for him. And she's also there for any other prisoners when they go to her for help. I want to say this is a woman that is truly an advocate, and she doesn't even know she's an advocate because she is a humble individual. So, Lula, I want to thank you for calling in. This is your first time calling in, and I hope you'll come on sometime in the future to hear what we're going to be discussing. But again, we will be doing an event in June, and I hope you'll join us then, too.
Okay, thank you. I will.
And we are now going to end this episode. Audience, again, I thank everyone for listening in, and we will be on tomorrow. I hope you'll join us. And good night, everyone. Have a great evening.
Same to you.